From the Tie Cats Audio Network, this is Tie Cats Today with Braden Neville.
On today's show, offensive line coach for the Hamilton Tiger Cats, Coach Mike Gibson, joins the show to discuss his 40-plus year coaching experience for 13 different teams across the NCAA and the CFL. He also shares some stories throughout his coaching career and talks about this core of his offensive line returning for next season. It's Thursday, March 14th, 2024, and this is Tie Cats Today. Coach Mike Gibson is a guy we could probably have on for multiple episodes. The guy's been around the game a long time. I want to pick his brain on his coaching journey, get some stories from his time in the CFL and NCAA, and trust me, there's a lot of them. We could probably have him on for multiple episodes throughout the season because he's been around the game so long and has so much knowledge on the sport, and he joins me now. Coach, thanks for joining me today.
No problem. Glad to be here.
Now, Coach, you have over 40 years experience in both the NCAA and the CFL. It's been an incredible journey, but what was it in the beginning of all this that made you decide coaching was the career path for you?
Well, I think it was the coaches I had when I was growing up. There were people I always looked up to and respected, and they had a big influence in my life. And if I was to point to one thing, I would say it was them.
And you made your coaching debut as a freshman's coach at Cornell University. Can you think back to those days and in that first year of experience of getting into coaching?
Well, at that time, freshmen weren't eligible to play varsity football in the NCAA, and I was very fortunate. I went to Cornell as a graduate assistant, which is a path most people start in coaching in college if they didn't play professional football or something like that. And I was in the right place at the right time. After my first season as a GA, there were some staff changes, and at that time the freshman position was a full-time position. And I worked for a coach by the name of Bob Blackman, who was a well-respected and well-known coach in college football at that time. And obviously, Coach Blackman saw something in me that he liked, and he named me the head freshman coach. And so at 23 years old, I was in charge of the freshman program, which consisted of all our incoming freshmen, about 60 young men. And I had graduate assistants working under me then, a position that I had just had the season before. And, you know, it was fun. It was quite an experience, you know, recruiting and everything like that. I had to learn how to recruit. So I look back with that with fond memories and a lot of pride in what we did. You know, it's funny, you asked me a question. A good friend of mine and I were talking the other day, and he sent me a text. He says, "Hey, I just want you to know that I'm going to retire." Mm-hmm. And he said, after 445 games, he says, "I think it's time to do something else." That made me think, well, how many games have I coached in my career? And so the other day I added it up, and going into this season, I'm at 648.
Wow. That's crazy.
That's a lot of football games. And but I can think back to the time at Cornell with fond memories.
When you were a coach at Cornell, you mentioned you're 23 years old. A lot of those players you're coaching aren't that much younger than you. Was it difficult to try and coach guys who are maybe only a few years apart from you?
I don't remember that so much as I remember a lot of the coaches on the staff were a lot older than me.
Yeah.
And but they took me under their wing. And at that time, Nelson, a gentleman by the name of Nelson Bob, was the offensive line coach. And I had worked under him, camp before and coached the freshman offensive line. And so he was kind of a mentor of mine. And Nelson really had a lot to do with the philosophy that I have and the beliefs that I have about coaching. Because just as when I was a player, I looked up to people at 23 and being a full-time assistant, I still looked up to those guys. Mm-hmm. You know, some of my fondest memories is going on spring visits with those guys to other colleges, and just they knew so many people and introduced me to so many people and everything. I mean, it was invaluable, the experience I had at Cornell.
How much different was it back then as opposed to now with coaching styles and how coaches approach the game?
I smile because it's a lot different.
Yeah.
It's a lot different. You know, I'm old school, obviously. I mean, I think if you were asked Revenberg and Wood Manzi and David Beard, those guys, I coach them pretty hard. Mm-hmm. I have a strong belief that players want to be coached. Players want to get better at this level in professional football. They want you, and I tell them my job all the time is to help you make more money. Mm-hmm. If I can do that, then I've done my job. And the players today are different. They would take more to heart coaching back then because it was how they were brought up too, and everything. Where I don't, this is going to sound bad, but you asked me the question, so I'm going to be real honest with you.
I appreciate it.
That society today doesn't adhere to people being hard on people. It's a little softer.
Mm-hmm.
And
for sure.
I just think that football players are a little bit different, but they're not totally different. You still have your ones who are, their feelings get hurt. And as I tell them all the time, hey, I'm not attacking you as a person. I'm attacking what I see on the field. As a person, I'll put my arm around you and love on you and go have a beer with you and all that kind of stuff. But on the field, I think you want to be the best you can be. And if you truly want to be the best you can be, you would take the hard coaching. And I'm fortunate. In Hamilton, I've got some guys who take the hard coaching and want to get better. And so maybe that's why I'm still around.
Do you find like you have to almost manage every single player differently based on their personalities and the situations they're in?
Yeah, I think that hasn't changed.
Yeah.
When I was at Boston University, we had a running back by the name of Paul Lewis. And Paul Lewis at that time was probably the best running back in 1AA. He put together a lot of 1,000, or when I was there, maybe 4 1,000-yard seasons, and he carried the ball a lot for us. And in an 11-game season, 1,000 yards is a lot different than 1,000 yards in an 18-game season. And, Paul came from a hard background and everything. He didn't have a father figure, so, he kind of looked – I was a running back coach at that time. He kind of looked at me maybe as his father figure a little bit, and he would tell me things probably he wouldn't tell any of the other coaches. So I think everybody's an individual. You treat, I tell my guys, even in Hamilton, I don't treat you all the same because some of you, as I said, those three inside guys, they can take to hard coaching.
Mm-hmm.
I got a couple other guys, when you coach them hard, they start pouting and, their lips hang and things like that. So you have to love on them a little bit more. But I think that, again, goes back to society, what you're used to.
A lot of players' role models growing up, you're spending more time with the coach than you are with your parents or your family. So it's easy to see how a lot of players, when they talk about going back in time and who they thank, they always thank their high school coach or their college coach. You spent nearly 20 years coaching at the college or university level, and then you made your jump to pro football in Winnipeg. What was that experience like transitioning from the college game to the CFL?
Well, I had a good line in Winnipeg. We went to the Grey Cup that year.
Mm-hmm.
And Dave Ritchie, who just passed away on Sunday, saw it on the Three Down Nation. He brought me up because he was an American coach and we had worked camps together and everything like that. And I'll never forget what Dave told me when he hired me. He said, hey, so I've seen you coach. Just come in and be yourself. You don't have to be anybody else. And the first thing I told the offensive lineman, and we had Mo Ellenbe, who was an Outland Trophy winner at BYU, mm-hmm. played in the NFL. And he was kind of at the end of his career by the time that I got to Winnipeg. But I told him, I said, hey, I'm a college coach. That's the only thing I know. So I'm going to coach you just like I did those guys. And there was a reporter who wrote a funny little quirk about me. He said, our new offensive line coach is chasing his lineman 10 to 15 yards down the field to tell him to get down, make a block and things like that. So really, interesting. Coaching is coaching. You have different types of coaches, obviously, and they have their own personality. I don't think you can be somebody else. You have to be yourself, and if you're not, the players are going to see through it.
Yeah.
And so wherever I've been very fortunate to coach at a lot of places in this league. And I guess my reputation precedes me because when I walk in there, they say, yeah, we've heard about you. And so they know what to expect. And I haven't changed.
And when talking to the guys on your O-line now, they always mention how much they love you. And they're always talking about Gibby and you're always hearing, so it's clearly been working over the years. So the style hasn't changed, but it's still remained effective. You went to the college level again, and then you returned, but this time as an offensive coordinator in Winnipeg. What's that jump like going from being a positions coach to coaching or to being the offensive coordinator?
Well, you know, I've been, when I was at Boston University, I was also the offensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. And so I'd had that experience. It just, you know, there's only so many hours in a day. It just makes your day, you have to be more organized. And, you know, there's two funny things you'll see about offensive line. Okay. Next to the quarterback, they're the most organized group. You come into their meeting room and, mm-hmm. you know, they have their desk real nice and they have their pad of paper and things like that. And then you go down to their locker room area and they're usually the neatest people. You know, they don't like a lot of junk around their locker and it's pretty neat. And, you know, things like that, where you may look at another section where there may be another position group over there and there's towels on the ground and many pairs of shoes out and things like that. But so I think you have to be organized, you have to be detailed. And again, you just have to be yourself. I mean, I have, you know, I've had that experience as a coordinator up here and coordinator down there. So it's just, you just fall back on things you know and that you've done.
Another position group you've coached is the running backs. Is it almost go hand in hand, the offensive line and the running backs, and being able to coach both? Like, if you can coach an O-line, you can coach the running backs?
Well, to some degree, because they have they have to be on the same page in protection. They have to be on the same page in how things are blocked. Running backs, I'll be honest with you, you just – again, I'll go back. I mean, I got a lot of stories I can tell you. But,
I'll listen to them all.
You know, one place that I coached, our running back was really good. He was really good. And the head coach said, just don't mess him up. He said, mm-hmm. you know, make sure when we leave that I know he's on the bus. And if he's not on the bus yet, give me a signal because we ain't leaving. And so, you know, it's just different. Offensive line is more technique oriented. Running backs are a skilled, I'm not saying offensive line aren't, they're skilled in their own way, but mm-hmm. running backs had God given ability. They can run, you know what I mean? And so you just have to teach them the basics and keep drilling their fundamentals into them as far as protecting the football and, you know, how to block and things like that. So there is a difference in it, but they have to work hand in hand without a doubt, right?
I feel like the offensive line over the years has grown so much as more of a skilled position group in a way where guys are faster and they're more in shape than they might have been, say, 20 years ago. But what do you think about how that position group has progressed over the years and how the athlete has progressed in that group?
Well, you know, they're just big athletes is what they are. And I think they, maybe from an outside standpoint, they progress more because on the defensive side, the defensive players are getting better.
Yeah.
I mean, if you watch the NFL combine just a couple weeks ago, I mean, you saw what those defensive guys, the numbers they were putting up in the 40-yard dash and quickness drills. I mean, it's unbelievable. So, an offensive lineman, I mean, your biggest job in pass protection, you got to stay in front of that guy, right? And in mm-hmm. run blocking, you got to move him. I don't care if you're moving horizontally, you're moving vertically. You got to get some movement at the point of attack. So I think it goes hand in hand. I just think today's athlete's better than an athlete 20 years ago. Why?
Yeah.
Because of all the training, the nutrition, the position specific, you know. I mean, like when I grew up, I played all three sports. And when I went out to recruit in college, I was looking for the three-sport athlete because that would show he must have been a good athlete if he could play at least two or three sports.
Yeah.
Where nowadays, I think it's so position-specific that, yeah, you have guys who play two sports, but where do they spend the majority of their time? They spend the majority of their time in the sport that they're better at and that they can see themselves making a living or getting a scholarship or whatever it might be. So I think it's just, you know, as I said, time has not been our friend in some ways as far as toughness and things like that, maybe, but it has been our friend in making the athlete more honed in on what his skills to be. I mean, you know, I'll just ask you this question. When you drive around the neighborhood or drive around the park, do you see any kids working on pass sets?
No, not a chance.
They all think they're hoop players and baseball players and things like that, but offensive linemen, they're getting more position specific in what they work on in the offseason and things.
Yeah, just it's interesting to hear you talk about it, because it is crazy how everything's progressed, and you're completely right. In 2007, big year for you and then that O-line, but what made that team so successful in Saskatchewan? What was it about that team and your offensive line that was able to get you to capture a Grey Cup?
We had great leadership. Jeremy O'Day, who's now the general manager in, Saskatchewan, was our center. He had been in the league probably 7 or 8 years, so he had a lot of experience. Dean Mikowski was our tackle, who's now a politician in Saskatchewan. But Gino was a great leader, and the players would follow him through a wall. And the thing about him is every day he treated like a game. I mean, he came to practice. It was serious. He liked to have fun, but at the same time, him and O'Day were great practice players. And I think that was what I think back about. We had some young guys with him. Mike Abu was probably in his second or third year.
Yeah.
He was a young guy, and we had a few others. Wayne Smith was with us and guys like that. So we had great leadership. They were willing to work. They had a toughness about them. They wouldn't back down to nobody. And that kind of resonated through the team. And, we had Wes Cates, who was a doggone good running back. We had guys on the perimeter who could catch the ball. We had Kerry Joseph, who's now coaching in the NFL, a smart football player, but he could beat you with his legs. And when things broke down, he always seemed to make something good happen for us. And it was a special group. Ken Austin was a really good head football coach. Those players rallied around him. And, Richie Hall, who's a legend in this league as a defensive coordinator. He was a young defensive coordinator, and those guys played. I mean, we were good in all three facets. And, obviously we won the Grey Cup. Probably not the best team up here I coached. When I was in Winnipeg in 2001, that was probably the best team. We were
– That first year?
Yeah, 15-3. We had sewn up our division by like week 12 or 13. And, we manhandled Calgary in the first game we played them.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last game of the season, like I said, we had things sewed up for about 5 weeks. So we rested a number of starters, both on offense and defense, as many as you can in the CFL with your roster. And they beat us by 1 or 2 points. And I was really confident when we played them in the Grey Cup. We were the better football team, and people, they can say what they want. We were the better football team. But on that day, just like in anything else, anybody can beat anybody. And we had a punt block. We fumbled the football a couple of times, and they still only beat us by 2 or 3 points. But that Saskatchewan team was a good team, and that Winnipeg team was probably the best team. I mean, you're talking about physicality. People were afraid of us because we would hurt people. And, that gave us an advantage over people because we were real physical.
You almost explained this year's Grey Cup in 2001 with the Winnipeg team this year and how they went into that game and then Montreal. And it's almost like the league continues to, you kind of see those storylines. That's what makes it so exciting. And you mentioned Kerry Joseph. The first game I ever watched in my life was back when the Ottawa Renegades were just coming into the league, and he was their quarterback then. So I was a big fan of him way back in the day. A couple more questions for you, Coach, before we go. But we have this coaches clinic coming up on April 21st. If you could give yourself advice when you started coaching of something you know now, what would you tell yourself?
Well, whenever I talk at a clinic, I tell everybody the same thing. If you can just take one thing from the clinic, and it can be one thing good or bad. You take something bad, I don't like that, or I wouldn't do that. At the clinic, you're just trying to find one thing. You're not going, don't go to a clinic and look for a new play or look to reinvent yourself as a coach. Go and pick up one thing. It might be something in how you handle players. It might be a phrase that you really like. Clinics are your time to grow. And, we've had this clinic, I guess, the last 2 or 3 years, and I've seen the numbers increase and the people, I tell them all the time, it's to their credit. I mean, anytime you can go and listen to somebody, I mean, even today, I like listening. I like going to clinics. I like when I'm at a clinic speaking or on a Zoom call speaking at a clinic, I make sure that I listen to the other guys too, because they either reinforce something I believe in, they give me something to think about, which forces you to grow, or they give me an idea or a phrase or something like that. Don't go expecting to reinvent yourself or reinvent what your offense or defense does. You have to have a, you have to believe in what you do and just go and try to pick something up, a little thing. And if you do that enough times, they lead to big things.
Yeah, it's going to be great to see a lot of these local coaches coming, learning from the this organization and the coaching staff. That'll be April 21st. Before we go, I want to touch a little bit on this year's offensive line. A lot of the same guys coming back for you, Coach, and that cohesiveness will be there. You got Revenberg, Woodmansey, Beard, all these guys coming back. But how do you like how your O-line's shaping up for 2024?
It's a good group. Just as you said, the continuity is critical in the offensive line, you know, and injuries happen. We all know they happen, but the longer those guys can play together, I believe there's two types of communication. There's verbal communication where they make a call and they block the call, do what they're supposed to, but there's nonverbal communication, and nonverbal communication really and truthfully sets an average group to an above average or a great group. And what I mean by that is they see a front. All right. They hear a call. They automatically, they're, you know, they don't have to think about it. Because they know, like, let's just use David as an example. Beard knows that if he makes a call that Revenberg's going to be there, because Revenberg, he trusts Revenberg. And it's all about trust. As long as, you know, if you can develop that trust in a player, and our group especially, I kid people all the time. I say, you know, a receiver on the backside, he can take a playoff. Mm-hmm. A DB on the backside, he can take a playoff. An offensive lineman can never take a playoff.
No.
And the reason I say that is because it's all in that box. It starts in the box. If they can't protect Bo, it's going to be a long day for Bo. If they can't at least move their person who they're supposed to block, then it's going to be a long day for the running game. Mm-hmm. And so that cohesiveness, that working together is a key factor. And it's another year for these guys. And, you know, you would expect them to grow. I expect them to grow. They're hard workers. They know what's expected of them. You know, they have a new coordinator in Scott, but they've had Scott for 10 games. You know what I mean? And so there'd be some verbiage as far as play calling and thing like that that might be new. But football's football. It's me against you, you know. And as long as we have the belief that we're as good, if not better, than the guy across from us, then we got a chance.
I appreciate it, Coach. I feel like I could have you on the show for hours just to pick your brain on all these stories, and I definitely want to get you back on, because it's crazy listening to your career and everything you've been through and all these teams you've coached and players you've been with. So, Mike Gibson, I appreciate you joining me, man. It was really great to chat with you today.
Hey, no problem. Look forward to seeing you when I get to Hamilton.